Let's bring in our friend Sam Constantino from Sportsnet into the conversation. We won't ask you, Sam, about retribution, but hey, I love the fact that it's January. Your latest draft rankings are out on sportsnet.ca. Are you starting to get those draft vibes a lot better now? We're only 6 months out.
Yeah, the big tell for me, first of all, the World Juniors, of course, mm-hmm. and then for us in particular, where we have heavy involvement, is our Sherwin-Williams Top Prospects game, which is in Red Deer on January 23rd. And that's, for me, where the juices start to flow. So we have a game actually Saturday the 19th, Calgary in Edmonton. Then we'll boogie in the car and get over because Lethbridge is in Red Deer that night. So we'll get a little look at Dylan Cousins and hopefully Matthew Robertson, plays during our game earlier in the day. But getting to see Zaitsev from Red Deer and getting to see Cousins from Lethbridge. And then we're going to stick it right through until the top prospects game. So we're going to really be able to hunker down on these guys, get a chance to meet a lot of them personally, and I really look forward to that, especially with the kind of year it is in the WHL.
Yeah, and when you start looking at where all these guys rank out, the one curious thing I'm looking at is we always see defensemen rise as we get closer to the draft. And you have Bowen Byram in the top 10, but not a lot of other defensemen. Do you anticipate anybody not named Bowen Byram could put themselves in that top 10 conversation as we get closer to the draft?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the big wild card is Philip Roberg, and he's really an interesting character because originally he wasn't invited to Sweden's World Junior Camp. Timothy Liljegren of the Toronto Maple Leafs gets hurt. He gets invited, so of course he goes, but he's playing back-end minutes when you have guys like Boqvist and Brännström who are already there taking up a heavy part of the load. So he did play. He did play sparingly. The one thing that's going to stick out in everyone's mind is what happened in August at the Helenka Gretzky. He was absolutely brilliant there, and he was a guy, I think, going into that tournament was completely off the radar. He brought himself into high-round consideration there, started to play and continues to play. And it's interesting because his game, when he goes back to Sweden, is more of a cerebral, stay at home, take care of business, move pucks. And it, quite a contrast from what we saw in August. And then you kind of hope to see that in the World Juniors, but there just wasn't space for him to do it. So I think scouts want to see a little bit more of that dynamic player who brings the offense. And that's why, for me, he's a bit of a wild card, but the fact is already in the books for him is the fact that he shows he has that offensive flair. We know he's got good size. We know he's a really good skater, and we know pretty confidently that he's decent in his own end based on how he plays when he's with his home team. So he's probably the big wild card that I think might threaten Bowen Byram in that spot.
How much of a direct contrast is he to a guy like Cam York, who is a defenseman in the National Development Program right now, a little smaller, but unlike Roberg, maybe has better offensive skills right away, and his skating seems just top-notch.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So you're looking for that dynamic kind of new-age guy, a little bit smaller, and Cam York would be your pick. So he's also a guy I would say would have an opportunity to kind of bolt up into that position and get inside the top 10. And simply because we just don't have a lot of defensemen. So every defenseman in this draft has added value because it's not like last year where we saw 14 taken of them in the first round. So if you're a D-man this year, 01 or late 2000 born, you're saying, ah, right on, man. I might go 4 or 5 spots higher than maybe I would have if it were last year or in a regular year where you see maybe 8 or 9 defensemen go in the first round. But York's a really interesting guy, too, because I think he really gets that that reputation for being a guy who's the high-end offensive guy. I talked to John Robleski, the head coach of the U.S. Under-18 program, last week, and he was really high on Cam York's ability to use his feet to be able to defend with a really good stick, good gap control, consistently in defensive position. I don't think he has that reputation in the scouting world, but it is interesting when you hear his own coach say that, who gets to see him on the day-to-day.
Sam Constantino from Sportsnet joining us here on The Playbook, talking the 2019 NHL Draft, Sportsnet 650. And Sam, since you started doing these rankings back in October, this is the highest that Peyton Krebs from the Kootenay Ice has ranked. He's 7th right now. Agree with you 100%. It's very obvious he is the best player on a pretty bad team there in Kootenay. What makes his game elevate to you right now so much that you were willing to give him that 7th spot for January?
It's the fact that he's dealt with pretty much adversity since day one. I mean, he had a good August. He too was very good in the Helenka Gretzky. You talk to some of the players who played with him and then were on that team, and they were wowing, at his ability. So first of all, you're getting that peer love, and I love that because you can go in and if you know a guy well, even at that age, 17, 18, 19, they're going to give you a pretty honest, candid opinion if you know them and if they trust you. And for the most part, guys do. And Krebs got a lot of love there. So that tells me that he was very well liked, not just for his personality, but for his ability to play the game at that event. Then you come into a situation where you have a coach who's coming down from the NHL and James Patrick. That can always be a challenge because that coach has pro expectations in terms of his teaching and his expectations for the club. So that can be a challenge to deal with. Not that that's a bad relationship at all, but it's a huge adjustment for a coach to come from that level, to come back to junior and just see how different it is from the time he was previously there. Then you have all of the stuff surrounding the movement of the franchise. And of course, if you're the captain, you're going to be the guy who bears the brunt of a lot of that conversation. It's going to be in the back of your mind, hey, what's going to happen at the draft? Where am I going to go next year? So these things are constantly playing with you. He's been named captain at his age. Doesn't happen very often. He's been on a team that's made so many trades that every time he turns around, he's got a different teammate. Yet he still has to be the captain. Oh, yeah, and by the way, he's a guy in his draft year, which comes with an enormous amount of pressure to start with. So if I throw all those little adversities into the pot, with the way he plays, with the pure love that he gets, plus the fact that even on that team, he's still at about close to a point and a half per game, that tells me that this kid is something special.
And, you know, when you start looking at these players now in the second half of the season here, how much more can the conversation change with guys having a strong finish to the year?
There's a couple of things that I think can make a change. First of all, if I look at Peyton Krebs, for example, really good players on not so good playoff teams. Are they able to carry that same level of intensity, play the same way, have really good body language, even though their team is down and out? The next thing would be playoffs. How do guys perform in the playoffs? When benches are shortened, when minutes are so much more important, when mistakes are magnified, playoffs play a big factor. And then the next thing you looked at that kind of goes along with that is the Memorial Cup, obviously, or the league championships, where that extra level of pressure is added. Then you have the April under 18 tournament. So for the guys in Europe, that's especially big because they're not playing in their playoffs to get back to play with their peer group on their national teams. For the CHLers, we know, for the guys who kind of, and Peyton Krebs might be one of these guys, it's going to be an opportunity to be able to go and show how good you are playing with players that are really good against players, the best in the world at your age group. So those three things factor into me into the second half for sure.
And, you know, it's always one of those things as well, because sometimes it becomes a bit of a confirmation bias because you see it at the end of the season, and sometimes we forget what a player does in the first half of the season. And when we're starting to project guys for the draft, how do you kind of figure out sometimes, okay, right now, this player seems to be better than this guy. And we saw this happen a couple of years ago in 2017 when Nolan Patrick goes second overall. He goes in the top three. You had Nico Hischier going one. Elias Pettersson went fifth. And the reason people said about Hischier and Patrick was they're more NHL ready. Now, when you start looking at a player, say, in this draft that might be ranked outside the top five, is there a guy you look at that you think could end up being the best player or the second best player in the draft, but is likely to go a bit later than people anticipate?
Well, Alex Turcotte would be the guy that I have ninth right now, who I think really fits that bill because he's had a really solid scouting record. The fact is he's missed a month and a half, so he's a little bit behind some of those who've been playing and playing on a regular basis. And when you look at the top three guys, guys who are playing internationally at the highest level, essentially, you know, a year and a half under their age group. So he'd be that guy for me. He's got NHL bloodlines. That always plays well. He's got a great scouting background going back to the last year and at the start of this year with the under 18. He's back in producing again. He's got size. He's a really responsible guy, but he's not just a responsible guy who has a ceiling of a third line player. Because he's able to produce, because he has good vision and he's a really good passer, he has the opportunity to be that second line guy. And so if I'm looking at a guy who, for me, at least right now, is outside of the top five, Turcotte would probably be that guy who could slip in there and give you kind of that, you know, that top five projection or top five value, if you will.
Talking with Sam Constantino on Sportsnet 650. And Sam, Team Canada didn't play a whole ton, of course, at the World Juniors recently, but based on what you saw, the five games from Brett Leeson, the overager who got passed in the draft last year, did it confirm some of your suspicions to his game, or confirm that maybe he is a little bit better along than what most people might anticipate?
Well, a couple different confirmations for me. It started in the two games in the Canada-Russia series, where he was able to keep pace, where he skated, where he created chances, where he was shooting the puck well, doing a lot of the same things, translating his game from Prince Albert to a level that he had not seen for a guy who hadn't played in international competition. And then you go into the World Juniors, and it's the same sort of situation. But he's got that kind of demeanor as a kid who I don't think much phases him. He's kind of calm and cool and steady and understated, and there's a little bit of humility there. So he wasn't going to be rattled by the task at hand, but he played well enough and he did a lot of good things. I mean, you know, if he finishes on a few of those chances, you're probably looking at a guy who's right in the tournament lead for scoring. Now, it's easy to say for most of Canada's players, they got all their cookies against Denmark and didn't do much the rest of the tournament. You know, Leeson would fit in that category as well. But in watching him closely, I really liked the game that he brought in terms of his ability to create, get in there, be a menace on the forecheck because of his skating, his size, good stick, good reach, and do those types of things. And he was still doing those at the World Juniors. The fascinating thing about this guy is, you know, we hear often the argument about having an older draft. There's more certainty as players get older. Well, Brett Leeson fits that bill. But you also hear about guys who think they're really good at the job who say, you know what, the skill in this job is being able to look at 17 and 18-year-old kids and projecting them. And so that part of the skill makes it more difficult to project a guy to being a really good player because he's a lot further away. When you get a guy who's 19-year-old, who's closer to being that physical maturity and closer to having that mental maturity, for me, it's kind of a home run to say, this guy's more of a known commodity, but maybe has a slightly lesser ceiling than what you might get at a, you know, the 17, 18-year-old kid.
And Sam, this is more of a general question, but we've seen a lot of high, talented Finnish players coming into the NHL over the past number of years in the past recent drafts. Of course, they celebrate at the World Juniors here as well. Is there something fundamentally you see them doing a little bit better than the United States and better than Canada, or is it simply that young Finnish hockey players are having some success right now, but things will balance out over the next couple of years?
Well, they're having a lot of success, and a lot of their super high-end guys are getting those really good experiences at the international level on good teams, playing with good players, the under-18s. You know, the under-20s winning at 3 in the last 6 years. You look at the under-18s, they've got, I think, 2 titles in the last 5 or 6 years in that event as well. So they perform well, and they do really well with their peer group. But the thing about some of the high-end Finnish guys, and Kotkaniemi is a really great example of that, the third overall pick by Montreal last year, is that these guys have an outlet that if they're elite players at that level, they're playing against men, and they're playing in the Liga, and the Liga is a really good league, and they're performing well against men, as Kotkaniemi did last year, as we're seeing from Kaapo Kakko this year. Whether it's Patrick Laine or Vesalainen, these guys are getting opportunities to play at a level that's really, really high. Some of them even get the opportunity to go and play at the Worlds. You know, L.A. Tolvanen would be one of those guys, for example. And so now not only are they playing well with their peer group, but they're getting those the added value of the experience playing against and with men, you know, well above their age bracket. So I think that's part of it. But from what I understand, and again, I can't corroborate this, but it does make a lot of sense to me. Apparently, at a young age, playing Finnish minor hockey, you have to play every position, including goaltender. And then once you get to about 11 or 12 years old, I think you settle into a position. But even though the understanding at a younger age, to know the responsibilities of playing a different position are all about, and to get the perspective, you know, how can kids process these things at such a young age? Well, I've got a 5- and a 3-year-old, and let me tell you, they can process a lot of things. So if you extend that age group to 10, 11, 12 years old, where they're playing various positions and they're getting different perspectives, that to me tells me a lot about what's going on in terms of their overall athletic ability, athleticism, attention to detail, the ability to understand the game at maybe a different level from someone who's played the same position basically all the way up.
And Sam, before we let you go, we have a couple of questions from our listeners. One's from Tony Roberts and one is from Dave, and they're asking essentially the same question. When it comes to Russian players, I mean, the political climate is what it is, but in terms of Russian players and some of them wanting to stay in Russia and not come over, is there any reluctance from teams now with Russian players? Or are we seeing that come back now and they are going to get drafted high? I mean, I love Podkolzin, for instance, and I anticipate he's going to go high. But what do you think the relationship is between drafting Russian players and NHL GMs at this time?
There is a bias, and it's not due to nationality. It's due to the fact that they have a really good league over there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people feel comfortable playing there. They know they're going to get paid over there. They've got great connections over there when you grow up in the system. And that's where the bias comes from. So if you're gonna draft a guy, for example, and it's where do you see, you know, an Ivan Barbashev who comes over and gets some seasoning in the American Hockey League when the option exists for him to go over and make big money in the KHL? Or Klim Kostin would be another example as a guy who could go back home and make tons of money playing at the highest level, yet his dream is to play in the NHL. So he's taken a couple of years in the American Hockey League to play. Rare is that player. And so if the option exists where the player holds the cards and says, unless I'm playing in the NHL, I'm going back to play in the KHL. And that happens. And that's what teams get worried about. The fact is that NHL teams want them over here developing on this ice surface with their own coaches, with their own development people, not necessarily going over and playing the KHL and doing all the same things that you did growing up. The league is different. The culture is different. The way the game's played is slightly different from what it is here in North America. So those teams want those players here. And if they feel at all that there's any sort of flight risk, you know, you look at Radulov from when he went home after playing some time in the NHL, Bjorkstrand, that threat still exists. I think the big defenseman in Vancouver would be another good example. Chibrikin, if I can't remember his name correctly, but would be a really good example of guys who, even once they get over here and you think you have them on that NHL path, can pack up the bags and head home and go play in the KHL, you know, at the drop of a dime. If they don't like their ice time, they don't like power play time, they don't like their minutes, they're getting sat a game, they're getting benched, you know, during the course of a game. So that threat still exists also. And those two things combined, the threat of actually coming over and getting seasoned and developing here, and the threat of once some of those players are here, that they can get up and walk away if they face any adversity at all, that's the thing that scares teams. Now, there are a lot of teams that have zero bias whatsoever. And you can go around the National Hockey League. I think Washington's a pretty safe bet. But when you've got Ovechkin there, what Russian kid doesn't want to go play with Ovechkin? Mm-hmm. You know, you look at Tampa Bay, Vasilevsky, and you think about Kucherov, you think about some of the Russian players that they have. I wouldn't say that there's any bias there. But I know, and I'm not going to name teams, that there are teams that do have that concern about players, whether it's their development or once they get here, taken off after they've already been in the NHL.
He is Sam Constantino, our Sportsnet's very own prospect guru. It's always fun talking prospects with you, Sam. I can't wait to talk again very soon, and we have a lot to break down when it comes to the 2019 draft. So keep up the great work, my friend, and I can't wait for your next list to come out.
Big quandary, guys. Get Pettersson healthy and make a run for the playoffs, or maybe he's on the DL and you get Hughes part two.
Well, I mean, you know, if you get Hughes part two, I think we'll deal with Pettersson being out for a little while, right? I mean,
yeah, that's could you, a quandary, right?
Well, and you know what? Before we let you go, you know, we've been sitting here talking a lot about Quinn Hughes as well and where he fits on this team. And people keep talking about, hey, the Canucks need a right-handed defenseman to play alongside Quinn. And watching Quinn play, though, does it matter which side he lines up, left or right?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And guys, if there's a guy who can make that adjustment in short order, he'd be the guy to do it.
Yeah,
it's your boots that really allow you to do it. And the big difference is, you know, pulling pucks off the wall on the backhand, moving the puck to the middle of the ice. Now, once you get your back turned and you're on the forehand, that you're not getting back pressure, whether you're walking a line or in your own zone, those sorts of things. So Quinn has the boots to be able to make up for those things that become challenging for guys playing on the offside.
Man, well, you know, it's tough because I'd love to see Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, and Jack Hughes in the same power play. That'd be fun.
Of course you would. Don't get greedy. You can't get greedy.
Hey, listen, we get a little taste of something good and we want more, all right?
All right, fair enough.
Sportsnet 650.